The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at advanced medical testing centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and as always, Monday through Friday from 10 to 11, we bring you information that you can use to support, improve, enhance, take care of your good health. And keep in mind, my little phrase is, when you go to mainstream medicine, that is disease care, a diagnosis, a pharmaceutical, an outcome. And when you listen to Natural Doc Radio, what do you get? You get health care. Good morning, Dr. Slavin.
Good morning, Jen. Morning, Janet.
Did I say something funny? No, it's just something went down the wrong way.
I have to get used to you standing while you do this show.
Okay, yeah, it's the new me. I'm lengthening my telomeres.
And to echo what you were saying, we're trying to understand why people get sick. You know, it's not that they developed a drug deficiency. You know, we're actually being exposed to toxins, or our diets aren't as good as they should be, and that gets us sick. But this was something interesting because we know that vaccines present a potential risk, although I think there's a large segment of the healthcare community that would disagree with that.
Unfortunately, yes.
And I'm just seeing here that there are even more ingredients in vaccines that we've been led to know about. You know, we know about the mercury in vaccines, the formaldehyde. Maybe there's aluminum in vaccines. If you remember, there's egg. You know, some vaccines are made using eggs.
Egg protein. So people who have an allergy to eggs or a sensitivity to eggs really should avoid those vaccines that contain the egg proteins. And a lot of times, if you ask your doctor about it, he's not necessarily going to know whether there is an egg content in the vaccine.
But here are some other ingredients I wasn't aware of. Peanuts. Now, that I didn't know of. It says vaccines.
Why would they put peanuts?
So vaccines are prepared in peanut oil. You know, so that can be a reason for people having allergies to peanuts. Then they mentioned here MSG. It says this is we know that MSG is a excitotoxin, it's been called.
Right.
Affects the brain. It's a salt that's so concentrated, it can actually cause brain damage in babies. We know in adults, the Chinese restaurant syndrome can cause migraine headaches. Some people experience vomiting from high doses. And when you inject it, it definitely becomes a neurotoxin. And yet, apparently, that's a component of some vaccines. Casein. We've heard about the negatives of casein, and they say many vaccines are brewed in casein, a form of dairy.
It's a dairy protein, and it's very, very interesting because I talk to people all the time who tell me that they've been diagnosed as lactose intolerant, and so they use lactate dairy products. And I tell them that many times, in addition to having that intolerance to lactose, they may very well have an intolerance to the casein, and there is still the casein in lactate products. And so to have the information that there is the potential for casein carryover because the vaccine is brewed in that base, it opens up a wide range of problems for many people.
And another ingredient, I don't think it's listed on the label, sorbitol, a synthetic artificial sweetener. I don't know why they put that in a vaccine, but nobody knows the safety of these things when you inject it into the body.
Nobody knows the safety of these things in such a complex combination.
And another component is gelatin. Gelatin comes from meat. And again, not sure why they have to put that into a vaccine. We're familiar with thimerosal. That's the mercury.
Going back to the gelatin, wouldn't that present a problem for those people who keep kosher or follow halal dietary guidelines?
The gelatin part?
Yes.
Sure, could be.
A problem. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And, of course, we mentioned the egg protein. The peanut antigen, they say here, the peanut oil has been used in vaccines since the 1960s. And because peanut oil does not show up in the final vaccine product, the manufacturers are allowed to leave it off the package insert. That doesn't mean that the peanut antigen is still not there. It could be. Peanut oil is just one growth medium in which the vaccine manufacturers grow bacteria and viruses for immunizations.
But, does it mention there, Dr. Slavin, serum from primates and from dogs? Because that is something that I've read at vacinfo.com as occasional ingredients in vaccines.
Which ingredient?
Blood serum from primates and from dogs.
If the vaccine is grown, because they used to use primates, used to use monkeys, and that's how they spread the simian virus, which is a type of leukemia. But I was just looking at this. In addition to the, they use the peanut oil to grow the viruses in the vaccine or the bacteria. They also use the egg embryo or casein, and this they say is what they use to make the MMR and influenza vaccines. It also says on the flu shot insert not to get more than one jab in a lifetime. Now, I'm not sure what they mean by that, because clearly they give more than one injection. Many children have horrible reactions to the formaldehyde, which is also commonly found in new clothing. So the big question is, there are thousands of people who are allergic to both the peanuts in the vaccine and some of the other ingredients. And I don't know. Nobody's mentioned that at all. I think the other thing, too, is when we come out and say something on this radio show, we're not making it up to the best of our knowledge. But I always like to try and verify it from other sources. Because it's kind of interesting that, this information is really hidden from the public. And what do they have to hide? Apparently they feel vaccines are dangerous, but they don't want the public to know about it.
Okay, so the perception, I would imagine, in the public's mind is that there is the presence of a virus or an attenuated virus, a weakened virus or bacteria, that substance is being injected into their bodies to create an immune system response. But when you read the ingredients, it goes far beyond the viral or bacterial particle that is in the vaccine. And you can be just totally puzzled by the fact that it would have sorbitol. Sorbitol is a sweetener. What do you have to have a sweetener in something that's being injected into your muscle? MSG. MSG is meant to enhance flavor. Why do they have to have monosodium glutamate, a very specific neurotoxin? So when you look at the list of ingredients that you just went through, Dr. Slavin, that you find that there may be a whole list of reasons why people have adverse reactions to the vaccines. And you wonder who decided on this mix of ingredients. One of the things that's a real huge issue for me is polysorbate 80. I speak out about polysorbate 80 over and over and over and over again. And that is also one of the ingredients. You look at the list and it's just absolutely heartbreaking that people are being exposed to these substances. Hydrolyzed porcine gelatin. People don't want that injected into them.
Now, I'm looking at a list of ingredients that's published by the Center for Disease Control. And they have here, I think, at least 9 different flu vaccines that are put on the list. And indeed, they show there's sucrose in some of the vaccines, there's mercury in the vaccines, egg protein. I haven't seen the peanut yet, but you know why? Because they say the peanut oil is removed entirely from it, but that doesn't mean its antigenic profile doesn't remain.
Okay, the meningitis vaccine, one of them is formaldehyde, aluminum, E. coli, sucrose, a very, very scary list. And so that MMR, Dr. Slavin?
Well, that's the one I'm looking at now, because that's a common one. It's been in the news a lot. And one of the ingredients is they call medium 199. And that includes vitamins, amino acids, fetal bovine serum, sucrose, and glutamate.
Glutamate is terrible.
I have a hunch they're putting that stuff in there because to grow the different viruses, and that's part of the growth medium. But they also have sorbitol in there.
Human diploid lung fibroblasts? My goodness.
So, I mean, I think this should be an eye-opener for somebody. Go to cbc.com/vaccines or just Google are peanuts in peanut oil and vaccines, and this is where I found it.
And that music means it's time for us to take a break here on Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we'll be right back with more information so that you can make informed decisions for your health. Stay tuned. At AMT Centers, testing is designed to give you important information before symptoms of disease appear. You get the information needed to evaluate potential disease development. With cutting-edge labs such as Singulex, Innovative, Genova, Doctors Data, and many more, you'll receive definitive evaluations of health issues before problems arise. Learn more at amtcenters.com or call 754-216-2332. 754-216-2332.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via telephone, Skype, or email with convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at janetcimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 to 11 a.m., right here on AM 1470 WNN.
Welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we've taken a sharp turn because this is very, very eye-opening information from the CDC about the ingredients of the whole list of different vaccines that are offered to citizens. And what's so amazing is the plethora of aggravating ingredients that a lot of people may very well have religious or ethical objection to. And then when you look at some of the chemical ingredients, and I'm talking about sucrose, polysorbate 80, any number of those chemicals, MSG, glutamate, these are negative and dangerously problematic ingredients, and they are found all through that list of vaccines. And Dr. Slavin, you were mentioning that peanut oil is one of the things that is found in some of the different vaccines. And we know that in schools, they're not serving peanut butter anymore. Mothers are told not to send peanut butter sandwiches to school with their children because there may be a child in that vicinity to the peanut butter sandwich that has an extreme allergy. There are just so many reasons why it's questionable why there might be peanut oil, of all things, in the vaccines. And it's day after day after day where we see so many different kind of warnings with regard to be very, very careful about what your child might be exposed to because of the potential for developing a peanut allergy.
No, I'm just trying to confirm the fact of peanut oil. There seems to be some disagreement as to whether the peanut oil is in there or not, although...
It was the CDC that said it, or it was another source that said there was possibly peanut oil in a vaccine?
There is one source that says there is adequate scientific evidence that peanut oil has been used in vaccines since the 1960s. I'm just trying to find that scientific evidence. Sometimes, if the bias is in within your belief system, you tend to agree with it.
But
I just like to check things out. But this is one of the reasons why I have changed the approach to practicing medicine away from the way it was taught in medical school, because you find it's not based on with the goal of helping the patient. It's really based on the goal of selling prescription drugs. And, there's a clear divergence there as far as the outcomes when you use drugs to help people versus addressing the underlying cause of their problem to help people. What makes more sense? So
Goal is to verify the possibility that peanut oil has been used in vaccines. It was very, very interesting. If there is a very, very minute exposure to peanut oil during the manufacture of the vaccine, it may not necessarily require peanut oil being listed on the label because it isn't necessarily an ingredient in the vaccine. It is just that the vaccine has been exposed to peanut oil. So the idea is that maybe there is some kind of carryover contamination, not necessarily the peanut oil being in the vaccine as an ingredient, but rather a contaminant in the vaccine. So there are a lot of different ways of viewing this. And someone who wants to deny that peanut oil is in the vaccine, they could do that and feel as though they're being truthful because it isn't an ingredient. It's a contaminant.
Well, think about this. How do vaccines work? You inject the vaccine, and you're really only thinking about the virus or bacteria that they put in there, and you expect the body to make antibodies to it, and that's the way the vaccine is supposed to stimulate the immune system. Well, if you put in peanuts, or we were talking about
egg yolk,
casein from milk. Your
MSG.
Body's going to make antibodies to those substances,
right.
And there's the root of a lot of allergies that people have or sensitivities, and that's been published. That's not my opinion now, just something I haven't given much thought about until this was mentioned. And this may be an excuse now that people could use to avoid vaccines, saying, they have allergies to the ingredients in the vaccine. That's a medical excuse.
Okay.
And you can pull this up online. You can get all this information, all the ingredients. And if you have a milk intolerance or a peanut allergy or MSG sensitivity, I think if you want to avoid vaccines, that might be the way to do it.
Okay. And those are absolutely identifiable, absolute medical reasons. So it means that I don't have to leave the country when vaccine is mandatory?
Well, maybe. Now, here's the history. This is interesting. Peanut allergy was first documented in several post-World War II studies of adults and children injected with the new Wonder Drug, right after World War II, or during the end of World War II, they had just come out with penicillin, or at least were using it in a widespread fashion. At this time, a challenge existed in that a dose of penicillin would last just a few hours. In other words, they didn't know what dose to give and how long it would last. So to prolong the action of the drug, the penicillin in this case, they mixed it with what was available during wartime, peanut oil and beeswax. It was a simple solution. The body would metabolize the oil and slowly release the drug into the bloodstream. Unfortunately.
But I would take my peanut oil orally. I don't necessarily like the concept of using the peanut oil intramuscularly.
Well, exactly. So when they did it this way, a handful of children and adults were sensitized to peanuts. So to reduce the side effect, the peanut oil was refined to remove as much sensitizing protein as possible.
And but yet, not necessarily 100% of the sensitizing protein.
Right. And yet, according to the FDA, most highly refined peanut oil contains trace intact proteins. So regardless, with its relative safety in penicillin, peanut oil was adopted into common use within the pharmaceutical industry. So when you read that they don't use it, I think you can see how it's used in many different substances you would have never thought. In 1964, Merck announced that it had patented a revolutionary peanut oil vaccine adjuvant. This news was reported in 1964 and 1966 in the New York Times, with follow-up in medical literature through the early 1970s. This adjuvant that Merck made provoked such high levels of antibodies, 64 times higher than the same vaccine in an aqueous or water solution, that any vaccine to which it was added could produce many years' worth of immunity. Was this potency safe? So the World Health Organization reported in 1973, found that the use of peanut oil was relatively safe if properly injected to avoid severe adverse reactions.
How do you properly inject it to avoid a severe adverse reaction, Dr. Slavin?
Well, they didn't answer that question.
Yeah.
But the safety of the adjuvant was challenged by others, and it was published in Postgraduate Medical Journal in 1973, and they documented the power of this adjuvant to sensitize recipients to vaccine proteins, and it therefore created allergies. So I think this is something we need to know about.
How many of the people giving the injection were told that there was a specific injection protocol properly injected to avoid severe adverse reactions? Were you ever taught that you had to have a specific way properly injecting people with vaccines? My guess is if you asked nurses if there was any proper way of giving a vaccine, they would say, no, you just grab the upper arm, stick the needle in, push the plunger, and you're good.
Well, just think back. You know, now they don't serve peanuts on airplanes.
Right.
I mean, they've avoided it. It's become an epidemic. Peanut allergies in children and adults grew slowly until the late 1980s, when its prevalence began to accelerate in children in certain westernized countries such as the U.S., Canada, England, and Australia. The rise is documented in emergency room records. And in the 1990s, teachers in the affected countries were taken aback by a sudden surge of food allergic kindergarten children. So we're seeing this whole rise, and maybe it could be traced back to the vaccines. The rise in life-threatening food anaphylaxis in children coincided with significant changes to the pediatric injection and vaccination schedules of the affected countries.
Okay, this is a sentence that's very, very interesting. Allergy is an evolved defense against acute toxicity. And I talk to people all the time when they tell me about an allergy. And I talk to them about their immune system is deranged. There is something that is creating an improper immune system response. So here's this whole picture of how allergies have become so common. Dr. Slavin, when you were a kid, how many people did you know of that were allergic to pollen, allergic to peanuts, allergic to milk, allergic to wheat? And when we come back, I'm going to ask that question again. I hear music, and that means it's time for us to take a break here on Natural Doc Radio. We're talking about how your immune system may have been affected by adjuvant ingredients in different vaccines you may have been exposed to over your lifetime. Stay tuned. More to come.
Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Dr. Herbert Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor. We are located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill, and you can find us on the web at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience, clean, comfortable, and efficient. We guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest price. We test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. We draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostic, Singulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call us today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
The Institute of Advanced Medicine brings you the latest in natural health care, reviewing the published research, attending conferences with health experts from around the world. That allows the healthcare team at the Institute of Advanced Medicine in Lauderhill to provide you the quality and experience you're searching for in a healthcare team. Testing to target your individual needs and treating with natural and holistic approaches, the goal is wellness. You can reach the Institute of Advanced Medicine easily on Commercial Boulevard just west of the Florida Turnpike or three blocks east of University Drive in Lauderhill. You can call us 954-748-4991 to learn more. 954-748-4991. And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we're talking about allergies, anaphylaxis, a wide range of sensitization to different common things that we're exposed to.
Well, it seems like they added this protein oil to enhance the...
Peanut oil
to enhance the body's immune response.
Well, to lengthen the time that penicillin was active.
But they also added it to the vitamin K injection that I think they give to most babies when they're born.
Right. And without speaking to the parents, the nurse comes in and is there with the injection. What is that all about?
And that became routine in the 1980s. And then you had the hepatitis B vaccine.
Wow.
And that vaccine rolled five different vaccines into one. So that you got one shot with, five different strains. And that was delivered to babies, despite there were no long-term studies to show if there was any benefit after all.
Isn't hepatitis B a sexually transmitted disease, Dr. Slavin?
Well, that's primarily or
contaminated drugs, needles.
And stuff. Yeah. So how long before the baby starts becoming sexually active?
I just think these decisions are absolutely revolting.
So here's what happened. So the injected adjuvants and toxoids and food proteins designed to provoke the immune system also increase the risk of provoking allergy. Allergy is an evolved defense against acute toxicity. And I think now things are beginning to make sense about maybe why we're seeing so many peanut allergies and allergies in general. You just never heard so much talk about these things before.
The allergies to peanuts, to allergies to wheat, allergies to dairy products, so many different food substances that provoke an improper immune system response in people.
Well, the interesting thing is here, they say the words allergy and anaphylaxis were invented to describe vaccine injuries.
Okay, so that are they saying that the vaccine injuries are made up? I don't get that sentence.
So you don't.
Well, the terms were invented, allergy and anaphylaxis, and it was strange illnesses that affected kids after having received a vaccine dose. And so this isn't real, this experience that children, this adverse event that children are experiencing. So we need to make up words.
No.
Why don't we just say an immune system injury? Is that too many words?
No. I can see where you're coming from there. The point that I think they're trying to make, though, it started in the 1800s when they started mass immunizations against diphtheria. And they were giving these vaccines to kids, and up to 50% of the vaccinated children developed some kind of illness. And it was an illness they had never seen before, so they just simply called it a serum sickness. And so we can see right from the beginning of vaccines, there's always been a problem with people having unintended reactions to it. And it's been seen in a lot of different areas.
Okay. Altered reactivity. That's a kind of an approach that was, according to this article, developed in the early 1900s. So altered reactivity, doesn't that tell you that the response that people are getting to this vaccine is different than the response that was expected? It was enlarged. So there was a much greater reactivity, a much greater sensitivity. And what they weren't taking into consideration was the long-term effects over the course of that child's life to their immune function.
Well, they never do, because they never do studies long enough to find out what's going to happen. So here's what someone said back in 1941 about this serum sickness. This is a quote. Serum disease, as this is called, is a man-made malady. If we had no curative serums, because now they're making the presumption that this is curing something, if we had no curative serums, and if there were no such thing as a hypodermic syringe with which to introduce the material under the skin, there would be no serum disease. Instead, multitudes would still be dying from diphtheria and lockjaw.
And I'm going to jump in here and say there has been studies showing that improved sanitation made an enormous difference.
Well, that's the whole point. So he goes on to say, thus we find ourselves in somewhat of a dilemma, faced with the necessity of choosing the lesser of two potential evils. In other words, the risk of a vaccine reaction or the risk of dying from the diseases those vaccines are intended to prevent. But like you said, study after study shows that the incidence of these diseases markedly dropped when you improve sanitation and hygiene and nutrition.
Right.
But this was a marketing tool.
Okay, so here's the marketing tool, and here I'm about to jump off the cliff with this statement, Dr. Slavin. Cancer, I don't know what the statistics were in 1900 or 1941 when Warren Vaughn made his statement about serum disease, but let's take a look at all of the cancer diagnoses. We now have cancer hospitals advertising their approaches on television, in print, in magazines. So cancer, if people wanted to talk about different individuals in their families, I'm going to say every single family could most likely point to someone in their family circle who'd been diagnosed with cancer. So here we are using these vaccines without very good forethought. These vaccines very surely interfere with how our immune systems mature naturally and how our bodies make antibodies to different bacteria and viruses. And maybe that altered immune response contributes to our body's inability to identify cancer cells, and consequently what would be a normal immune system response to reduce the proliferation of those cancer cells, maybe that is altered with the vaccine.
Or that,
I told you I was jumping off the cliff with
no,
that
no,
one.
Well, the simian virus 40, which is well documented, spread cancer to the recipients of the vaccines right. That were grown in primates that had that. So they go on to say here, and so it's clearly acknowledged that these adjuvants in vaccines were creating problems. So they say as vaccine ingredients became better refined, to reduce the sensitizing proteins, the prevalence of serum sickness decreased. But here's the next problem. With the 20th century expansion of vaccination programs and schedules to include food proteins and adjuvants, however, other unforeseen problems arose to take its place. And one of these was the rise in food allergies. So they're clearly putting food proteins and other adjuvants in these vaccines that they're not even mentioning.
And so consequently, the recipients of those vaccines are walking blindly into an immune morass. It's a very, very scary situation when you take into consideration everything we've spoken about this morning.
Now, remember a few months ago we talked about this. I'm not sure how many of our listeners heard it, because I think we only mentioned it on one show, maybe a second show, where they were using vaccines as a form of birth control.
Well, that's what, when we started talking about this, because the adjuvant ingredient caused the female's immune system to attack a very critically important component of maintaining pregnancy.
This is documented. It was done in third world countries. And they didn't publicize it. So they do these things and they don't tell you. That's the whole point. So who knows what's going on with these vaccines? If they don't tell you that they put peanuts in there, what else are they putting in there that they're not telling you about? But the point is that in third world countries, they gave only the women the tetanus vaccine that was combined with HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin. That's the hormone necessary to support a pregnancy. So now you're causing that woman to make antibodies against the hormone necessary to support a pregnancy, so they can't maintain a pregnancy. And this is what they did for population control. And by the way, that's a recurring theme in the
population
world.
Population control, reducing the global population.
Not that isn't an important concept, but not the way they go about it. That's the difference.
Secretly. And in third world countries.
Yeah, I mean, do it with vaccines. Just do it with maybe better birth control, for example, or better education, or more responsibility. You don't reward people, as they do in this country, for having more babies. That's, you know, just a thought.
So many things that people need to know about, once again, in order to make informed decisions. Okay. Dr. Slavin, do we want to talk a little bit about homeopathic nosodes? Homeopathy is an FDA-regulated form of medical treatment, and nosodes in homeopathy are available for a wide range of infectious and contagious diseases, and they impart, without all of these negative adjuvant ingredients in vaccines, the nosodes create an immune response, protecting people from a specific disease. That music means it's time for us to take a break here on Natural Talk Radio. I'm Jennifer Brownlee here with Dr. Hope Slavin. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned with the current state of your heart and blood vessels? Advanced Medical Testing Centers, your premier blood draw center, draws for Singulex Labs, which offers specialized blood tests that can help you uncover hidden cardiovascular disease that other tests may miss. Talk to your doctor today about the Singulex tests and call Advanced Medical Testing Centers to schedule your blood draw. We guarantee your on-time appointment and guarantee the lowest price. Call us at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a proud sponsor of Natural Doc Radio, which airs on this station each weekday morning at 10 a.m.
Hi, I'm Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor and co-host of Natural Doc Radio. If you're in search of the fountain of youth, if you're trying to figure out how to stay young and healthy, there are three main factors that will determine how well you age.
The good news is you can take control of all of them and dramatically slow down your aging process. Through my counseling sessions, I work with clients and manage these three areas to stay young, vibrant, and healthy. I can help you maintain optimal health that will keep you looking and feeling young again. I provide you with the in-depth knowledge and information you need to slow the aging process. So schedule your appointment today, JanetCimarelli.com. Don't wait, your clock is ticking.
And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and today we're talking about toxins that may be injected into your body in the name of immunity from certain diseases. And before we get back to the discussion, just a little bit of information that supporting your antioxidant status with a very, very natural product like Janna Juice, just two capsules a day, you're going to get the antioxidant benefit of goji, of acai, pomegranate, raspberry, black cherry, mangosteen, all of those fabulous superfruits without being exposed to the sugar. So you're going to get antioxidant foundation. And then when you add Jannabiotic to that picture, you are going to reduce inflammation, enhance how your immune system can function correctly. So here are two very, very simple foundational products that allow antioxidant status to be maintained and inflammation to be reduced. Dr. Slavin?
I was just looking at other websites that are trying to say that no such thing as peanut allergies. Peanut oil in the vaccine, so therefore it's not a problem. I think that when the questions come up, because we see this so often, they say, well, there's no proof there's peanut oil in the vaccines. Well, there's no proof that there isn't peanut oil in the vaccines either.
Well, it isn't that the peanut oil is an actual ingredient. And so it's a question of semantics. Grown in a medium that contains peanut oil, but then the vaccine is taken out of that growth medium. So are you being truthful by saying there is no peanut oil in the vaccine? Yes, indeed. Has the vaccine been exposed to peanut oil? Yes, it has.
Well, it seems like the possibility is certainly there that, maybe peanut, but it's not the only reasons to avoid vaccines.
It's just one of a multitude of reasons.
But the thing I'm still looking for is the study that's been done to show clearly that vaccines are safe and effective.
Well, can't you go to the CDC and to their article on vaccine safety, and can't you trust the CDC to give you 100% truthful information?
Well, you probably can.
Really? I don't know that the CDC is going to give me all of the information that I need to make an informed decision.
You think there might be a conflict of interest there?
I think that the CDC is very supportive of pharmaceutical approaches to the exclusion of other approaches. And so I have a problem.
Well, if you go to their website, under the common vaccine safety concerns, they go into vaccine adjuvants. Those are things added to the vaccine besides just the bacteria virus the vaccine was intended to prevent. They talk about autism and vaccines.
Okay, so I'm going to jump in here with regard to autism and vaccines. Is it a very, very direct issue with a vaccine contributing to the development of autism? I don't think it's very direct. I think sometimes it's a combination of different components that is an assault to the baby's immune system. So if the baby is stressed, if the baby has a lot of sugar on a regular basis, if the baby has a cold, if the baby is teething, and if the baby has a high sensitivity to one of the adjuvant ingredients, the immune system response is unpredictable, and consequently, there's a negative neurological impact of the vaccine. It isn't necessarily a direct picture.
Well, vaccine injury goes back right from the beginning. But in 1955, some batches of the polio vaccine that were given out, and they had passed all the safety testing available at that time, but caused over 250 cases of polio that were attributed to the vaccine. So clearly that's always a risk.
So being exposed to that polio vaccine resulted in paralysis for some of the recipients of the vaccine.
And they say it's okay to recommend vaccines as long as you have a national vaccine injury compensation program. We'll give you money if you get sick from the
Isn't that a kind of secret program? Do a lot of people know about it? Okay. Have the people been able to discuss their settlement with the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program?
Between 1955 and 1963, the polio vaccine, I guess in some cases, was contaminated with the SV40 virus, the simian virus. The virus came from the monkey kidney cells used to produce the vaccines. Once the contamination was discovered in the Salk inactivated polio vaccine in use at the time, then the government requirements changed, so vaccine testing had to be done to make sure there was no SV40 in there.
So they weren't looking at anything else. They were just looking at that the vaccine was free of SV40, and that's simian virus 40.
And then they go on to say there's no evidence to suggest that the SV40 has caused cancer in humans. Then in 19...
And this is the CDC saying that. Why I have a little problem with that.
Then in 1976, there was a big push to get people vaccinated with the swine flu vaccine, even though there was a small increased risk of developing Guillain-Barré syndrome. And again, they're going to say, well, it was worth the risk. But it's not worth the risk to the people who might get the vaccine.
Who might be injured by that vaccine, the serious neurological disorder risk.
And in 1998, there was concern about the hepatitis B vaccine and a possible link to multiple sclerosis.
Is there an increase in the number of cases of MS being diagnosed, Dr. Slavin?
Possibly. Who's doing the study, though? Nobody's... then there was another association between Guillain-Barré syndrome and the meningococcal vaccine back in 2005 to 2008. Didn't they tell us back in 1955 with the polio vaccine that they were going to improve their standards and make sure the vaccine is perfectly safe? Then in 2007, Merck voluntarily recalled 1.2 million doses of the H-flu vaccine because of concerns about potential contamination. And let's go to the latest one in 2013. Here again, Merck recalled one batch of Gardasil that's used for the human papillomavirus. It was a precaution following an error in the manufacturing process. That's an error they caught, by the way.
And Frontline is doing a program about the dangers of nutrition supplements when all of this is available for them to let the population know the dangers they're being exposed to with vaccines. Questionable choices here.
So I think as potential consumers of vaccines, you have to know this and, you know, make your own choices. Now there was, remember, sudden infant death syndrome? And they said maybe there was some linkage to vaccines that they're giving the kids before they even leave the hospital. So, I mean, there are a lot of unanswered questions only because there are not any conclusive studies. And my experience is that they usually don't do studies when they're afraid of the outcome. They made a mistake with chelation. They did a study, and it showed that chelation was actually a very good option for people with heart disease. And that's all they were looking at in that study was, did it save lives? Did it prevent heart attacks in people who had already had a heart attack? And they thought they would prove that chelation was ineffective, but to the contrary, they proved it was very effective. So we need, as healthcare consumers, to do a little research on our own and then make up our own minds as to what's safe or not.
Okay, and so that's why Natural Doc Radio is here. And keep in mind, if you miss one of our shows from 10 to 11 live Monday through Friday, you certainly can go to naturaldocradio.com and listen to all of the shows. They are recorded and very, very promptly put up online at naturaldocradio.com. And Dr. Slavin and I will be back tomorrow at 10 o'clock with more information supporting your good health. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Listen every day for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in again next time and get healthy. The opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.